You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 24th of May, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com tonight. Because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing?
Good evening, Sven.
Yeah, sounding good tonight. The microphone is sounding good tonight, I think.
That's sure.
The listeners will appreciate that. How's your week been?
How's it been? Well, as far as doing the back 20, I still haven't managed to get a floor going, so how long that'll continue for, I don't know. Usually by now there's a bit of, you know, a sign of a flow in part, but this hasn't shown us yet. Plenty of information, but all disjointed. So we'll wait on that one still. For the rest of the time, I suppose up and down, been all right, you know.
You want to wait until you've got that inspiration there?
So definitely, because I always have done before. I've never worried about ending a part or doing a part before, so I'm not going to start now.
Yeah, well, technique or the strategy has worked so far, so you don't really want to change it now, do you?
No, not at all. Of course, if I don't get it to the standard that I want, then it just won't go ahead.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing it anyway. Have you heard of a documentary series called The Apotheosis of Evil at all?
I don't know a lot about it. I think I may have heard the words for the title.
Yeah, it's being mentioned as sort of in the same league as Greatest Story Never Told, as people were asking in the chat room whether you'd heard of it yet. I heard of it the other day, and I listened to the guy that's been interviewed, and he sounded great, sounded like he put a lot of work into it. And then he said he was influenced by March of the Titans. And I thought, well, I hope he double-checked the information he was getting from that book, because I did a small series a while back based on that book on Lost White Empires, and I discovered that there were a lot of mistakes in it, a lot of really quite glaringly obvious mistakes in it. So I had to double check stuff. So I hope he didn't just go through the book and just put everything from that book in there into this series without double checking it. But I haven't seen it yet myself. Apparently it's, you know, he's done a very good job of it. It's 10 hours long. So it's, you know, your documentary style is still influencing people to this day, Dennis.
Seems so, yeah. I mean, the inverted commas enemy call it bum numbing. We don't have to watch it all at once anyway, you know.
Bum numbing. Yeah. And brain exciting, I guess. Don't mind bum numbing if your brain is excited by it. And life changes afterwards from watching it.
Well, so it does.
We've got a comment here from Cuck Hunter that was left last week to begin with. He says, and this was actually left on the Truth Will Out Radio podcast. He says, "Hi Sven, I'd like for you and Dennis to debunk this man who claims that World War II was all staged and that the Germans were in on the destruction of their own country. This post of his offers some compelling evidence. It shows Hamburg after a bombing raid. The entire city blocks are bombed out, but the trees right next to the city blocks are in perfect condition and unscathed. I hope this man is wrong, and hopefully there is a valid explanation for this anomaly." That's what Cuck Hunter says, and the website itself is Heritage Helm. And this is a quote from him. He says, "The photographs show the trees undamaged, completely unaffected by the fire which consumed the whole city, except for the trees. The trees are not scorched or burned. They are green, leafy trees when they should be nothing but charred stumps. Now, either this was an act of God, because it is impossible to explain how this could be, or the photographs are fake, or the narrative is false." And I think this just shows that, you know, people just assume that because they can't find out the answer, there can't be one, and it must be a conspiracy.
True.
And I mean, also to think that, you know, that it was a lie that Hamburg wasn't really bombed. I mean, that's, you know, you've got to be pretty gullible, well, I think, to think that.
Yeah, I mean, Hamburg wasn't the only city what was firebombed. Every major city and even smaller towns suffered. And the Hamburg one was, I think, 1943, and the bombing peaked in 1945. So, you know, there's a lot of dead between this time, between Hamburg and Berlin. And another thing about Hamburg is it lasted 10 days. I remember looking at this while we were doing a documentary, and roughly 30,000 women and children were estimated dead. It caused a huge influx of refugees to leave. About 1.2 million went on the move, because obviously this was terrifying. And I think not Dresden, but Hamburg, the term Firestorm was first formed, which is German for firestorm. And like I said, that wasn't for Dresden, that was for Hamburg. So he's got a lot of proving to me anyway.
It definitely happened, and you found another picture. I mean, just before I get into why this could be or what the reason for it could be, I mean, you found another picture, didn't you, of a cathedral that was completely unscathed?
In Cologne.
Cologne.
It does happen from time to time. I remember on the Boxing Day once we had a big tsunami somewhere around the world, can't remember quite where, India way somewhere, and I saw the photographs after that, and it obliterated everything in its path, and there was a church standing.
Well,
or I think mosque,
it does happen. Well, the video that we actually debunked last week, part of that was they were trying to say that the Americans actually had precision bombing, and they were saying that they really did. They got really clever with their bombing, and look at this video here where they're able to blow up this boat, they're able to blow up these houses, they're able to blow up this factory, and they're even able to blow up this tractor. Or whatever it is. And I remember in your, in one of your documentary series, you showed them firing on somebody that was on horseback, I think.
Yeah, farmers.
So they did have enough precision to know what they were hitting, which actually makes it worse, because it was deliberately done that they did all this firebombing of the civilians. Mm-hmm. But the reason why this could happen, I think, when you look at the picture, you've got a great big road, a double-breasted road that goes between the houses and the forest, and that's a fire break, and that's why that road is there. There's nothing flammable in that road. So if you've got a fire in the city there, number one, it can't actually reach across that road because there's nothing flammable. Yes, you've got that heat there, but number two, a fire draws in all the oxygen. And that's what gets the fire going. It draws all the oxygen in. So there wouldn't have been any oxygen that was coming there from those trees. The trees wouldn't have been able to catch fire. The air would have been sucked away from them into those flames and burning up in the city. And that's why you've got the fire break there. That road there was a fire break. So it's perfectly logical that that's actually what you're going to see. I mean, you don't. If you've got a fire in your grate at home, it doesn't set fire to everything that's 2 feet away from it, does it?
But it does suck the air.
Yeah, but it sucks the air in basically because you've got stuff that's not flammable that's in front of it and around it.
In fact, so explain the cathedral.
Well, I think that must have just been that must have either been an act of God or chance or of precision. Maybe they didn't want to bomb the cathedral. I mean, you know, why would they want to bomb a cathedral? It's terrible that they did bomb some cathedrals. But you can imagine, yeah, well, you know, the pilot saying, no.
They did in Nuremberg, but maybe for different reasons.
So, you know, that is what you would expect to see. That's what that road is. It's a fire break.
Mm-hmm.
So,
nice one, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a conspiracy. And you would think that, you know, people would work that out and not say, oh, it's impossible to explain. They must sort of think, well, I can't explain it. Maybe somebody else can. You know, that's the attitude to have, really. Well, we've also got some quotes on Jews, which I thought were quite choice. And these were left on your Wisest of the Wise channel. This was from Robert Puffer. And the first quote is from the Judaica Encyclopedia, 1971. Jews started to call themselves Hebrews and Israelites in 1860. So not back in Old Testament times, but just 150 years ago. That's when Jews started to call themselves Hebrews and Israelites. Before then, they were called Talmudists or pagans. infidels, devil worshippers, or whatever. But yeah, they didn't call themselves Hebrews or Israelites.
Oh, this is where they put the sheep's clothing on.
The second one comes from the Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 5, page 41. Esau Edom is modern Jewry. And I think it actually says is in modern Jewry. And that's basically an admittance that's what they are. They're descended from Esau Edom, who married his Canaanite wives, which is why Paul, in his letters, makes all those references to Esau, and not all Israel are of Israel, calling them the synagogue of Satan, and it's in the book of Revelation as well, and Paul compares Jacob Israel to Esau Edom. One of them was given the promise, and that was Jacob Israel, and the other one is cursed. And that's why Paul was talking about it, because in Judea, most of Judea was filled with these descendants of Esau Edom. And that's why the Jewish Encyclopedia says Esau Edom is modern Jewry.
Mm-hmm.
Proof. Third one, it says it is incorrect to call an ancient Israelite a Jew, or to call a contemporary Jew an Israelite or Hebrew. That's from the Jewish Almanac, 1980. And Judaism is not the religion of the Bible. And that's a quote from Rabbi Ben Zion Boxter, from Judaism and the Christian Predicament, 1967. And that's the problem, because people think that Judaism was the Old Testament religion. It wasn't. The Old Testament religion was a Hebrew religion.
Yeah.
Judaism came about later. Talmudic Judaism was an offshoot of Phariseeism. And then finally, he says, Edomite Jews told Jesus they were never in bondage to any man. Therefore, they were never with Moses in bondage to Egypt, never in bondage to Assyria with the northern 10 tribes of Israelites, and never in bondage to Babylon with the tribes of Judah or Benjamin. Therefore, Jews were neither Hebrew nor Israelite, neither are they Semitic, but that is another story having to do with Esau Edom, their granddaddy. So that's proven it again from the verses of the Bible, but you can prove it from, you know, these quotes that the Jews say themselves. You can prove it from the historians of the time that this is what happened. This is the origin of the modern Jew. Is not in the Israelites, it's in the Canaanites. So lots of backup evidence there for what you were saying in your video.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got a comment that was left in the chat room for you. And this is from Fight Back One. He says, does Dennis think that in today's unstable European climate, another Hitler could arise and capture the mood of the fed-up whites? Could there be another Hitler, Dennis?
Well, the only problem to that is they are wise to this kind of thing. And they will be on the lookout for such a person if such a person does come around. Because it has happened numerous times throughout history, somebody comes along with enough charisma and, self-importance to rise from a lowly state to leading armies. So, they're not unaware of it. And I think they will be looking for it. It's been done once recently in the case of Hitler. So that's going to make it a lot higher.
I think you've got to look at things as in Hitler was right for the time 70 years ago. If somebody was to emulate what Hitler was doing back then today, then I don't think he would succeed. Because if you were to go out there and start exposing the Jews, you wouldn't have a chance politically, for a start.
Yeah.
It's just not possible in this day and age. But I think if you look at the fact that what he was doing was exposing the problems that people could see around them, he was exposing the source of them. And the problems that people see happening around them today are usually caused by Muslims. So I think the closest, I know people are going to hate me for saying this, but the closest to it are the populists that are pointing out the crimes of the Muslims. Because what Hitler was doing was populism of its day, which was pointing out the crimes of the Jews. They didn't have problems with Muslims. They didn't have problems with Muslims at all. They had problems with degeneracy, banking, and at the source of all of that were the Jews. And that, yes, the Jews have been responsible for immigration, but what people see around them today is Muslim grooming gangs. They see drug dealers. They see terrorism. They see floods of Muslims coming into Europe. and the populists that are actually highlighting that and that are getting lots of support, to me, that you know, that's like the mirror image of what Hitler was doing. Obviously, none of them are as into natural law that Hitler was. I mean, a lot of what he talked about was the natural order that just doesn't change. That's Logos. And I guess you got E. Michael Jones that talks about Logos. So there's little bits of what Hitler did that I can see in various people, but not all in one person. And also, I think it would be for somebody to unite everybody in the way that Hitler did, for him to unite Germany, it would have to be over a different issue today, I think, possibly Muslims. I don't know what you think of that, Dennis.
Well, I think what you're saying is true. Well, the only problem is what you're saying is that the source isn't revealed. And what they've learned from the lesson in Germany was, let's put up a curtain, i.e. the Muslims, and let's hide behind that curtain, let them take all the blame. And if anybody does reveal that it's us, then there's enough people who support Muslims to debunk it.
Hopefully these people that are exposing the Muslims, if they get enough power, they'll get enough courage to possibly expose the Jews that are working alongside them. I mean, this main organization, Tell Mama, that tries to silence people for criticizing Islam, that was started up with the rabbi, and that was started up with the campaign against anti-Semitism. And so you can see that these links are there. And if they look back in history, because they're often talking about how the Muslims broke into Europe, made war against us, hundreds of times they tried to break into Europe. And each time they did break into a country, it was the Jews that let them in. And it was the Jews that profited the most and had high positions of society once these Muslims were let in. So they've got to discover this at some point, because they do look into history. I mean, Anne-Marie Walter, she's written a book on terrorism and Islam, and I don't think it mentions Jews once, apart from to say that Muslims don't like them in the Quran. So they've got to come across it at some point. And if they're going to be true to themselves, then they'll have to make a choice whether to speak about it publicly or whether to you try to avoid it just for the sake that they actually want to get somewhere and do something. And I tend to think that, maybe people like Anne-Marie Waters and Paul Golding, maybe they do know more than they let on, and they're just, being sensitive over the JQ in order to try and get somewhere, because they think that they'll have even more problems if they don't.
I'm pretty sure they wouldn't know about things like the Barcelona Agreement, where, they were all gathered around the table, Israel, Arab countries, European countries, all listening to the plan of moving Africans and Muslims into Europe at that time. So I'm pretty sure that, if they've dug deep enough doing what they're doing, they would have come across that.
And are the general public prepared to, will the general public be prepared to accept that if they were told it, or would they still?
No, I don't think they will be. No, yeah, I think it's because it's so, the curtain is so Muslim and so, every argument, it's Muslim, then suddenly just to throw the Jews into that question, into that pot, is, enough for the Jews to call anti-Semitism and for the public to agree.
And it's the biggest taboo, isn't it? I mean, you think about it, it's hard enough to get people to realise what's going on with Muslims, because they worry so much that they're going to be called racist. And, if you're going to say to them, well, you've also got to denounce Jews as well, people are going to be a little bit frightened of that. Oh, no, that's anti-Semitic. Oh, no, that's a Nazi. That's Adolf Hitler. I'm not a Nazi.
So, you're going down that road, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real challenge for somebody to do these things. I do think somebody could unite people in the way that Adolf Hitler did and unite the different classes. Maybe even Tommy Robinson is doing that. He seems to be uniting different classes together. But I don't think that they would be able to do that if they were talking about the Jews. That's just the sad state we're in.
The problem with Tom Robinson is he openly admits he doesn't like right-wing or Nazis, as he calls them. So he closes that door straight away.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, he's uniting people. He is popular. But the way that he's actually become popular has been by watering everything down so till it's almost unrecognizable. So it's just, well, we're just criticizing Islam and we're not against race mixing, and they'll be okay if they just assimilated. I mean, it's so yeah. watered down, but he has managed to get a popular movement going. That's what I'm saying. I mean, he's managed to get movement going.
But I don't think he's a Hitler, to be honest.
Yeah, but that's what he's being called. That's what he's being called.
Yeah.
That's what the left will call him. We live in a different age today than it was 70 years ago, I guess. And we just have to put up with
things
that.
Things have been tightened up and roads have been blocked. And they're not silly, these people. They know what can happen in certain circumstances. They've done it enough times. And they came close to being beat in World War II. So I don't think they're going to make the same mistake again.
Yeah, they tightened everything up, and we just have to adapt to it. We'll keep speaking the truth here at Radio Aryan, but I mean, even the way we do this, we can't really reach out to people. We have to wait for people to wake themselves up and then come and find us.
Strangely enough, the documentary Communism by the Back Door has been put up on YouTube by a number of other people. The actual full length version, the bomb dumping, 6 hours. And apparently, on one channel last week, there were, I think, 14,000 new people to the channel. So the people are searching for answers, and they can go off to various, certain quarters. I mean, they used to go to Alex Jones and other places, but and I know there's only one source on YouTube what tells us as it is, and that's these three documentaries I'm doing.
Well, and eventually, people will find them. And then through them, they will come and find Radio Aryan. And this is why I'm not too against populists and civic nationalists, because I think most people were populists or civic nationalists once before they became racial nationalists.
Yeah. I mean, I was in a way, when I look back on it now and doing that first documentary, I don't think there was anybody in the position to be able to do that documentary such as I was, because obviously I've grown up in a family which talked about Hitler, who fought on the side of Hitler, and a totally different outlook on life, even though I didn't let it affect me as I grew up as such. I got on well with, obviously, the English lads and lasses. But I was in a position when the time came to be able to tell that story, because I was probably, privy to that story, the only one probably in the country privy to that story. And then to be able to put it into a documentary is another added technique needed. So I find it, I don't even think I drew the short straw. I think I would give the job anyway.
Well, you also tailored the documentary to people that this was all new information as well. It wasn't sort of tailored for people that knew all of this, that were National Socialist already. It was aimed at people that this was all totally new to them. That was the really good point about it, because it really did help wake people up, basically, to use that.
Yeah, they filled in a lot of the holes which people have always suspected or found to be. They couldn't quite, the explanations that they were given didn't quite satisfy them, but obviously there was nowhere else to turn, and that, I think that documentary helped in that way as well.
I mean, you had people putting it up on David Icke and it being removed from David Icke. It was the conspiracy theory guys that, discovered it and then discovered the truth through it.
Makes sense. That's the problem. I mean, if you watch that documentary, then you watch the second one, that all makes sense. Now, the third one goes even a little bit deeper in some cases and could be proven. But obviously, it's a shock to a lot of people that it actually was a holy war.
Yeah, well, that's the point, isn't it? This third one, it's really, there's a lot of new information that you've unearthed showing that it was all about a war against Christianity. And, this last episode, that's upset some Christians because of the views that are in it. The next question I got for you, this is from Slaptrap. He says, question, do you subscribe to the idea that only whites, the lost sheep of the House of Israel, can be saved, or do you believe that any race can be saved? I have this question since the idea that the lost tribes were Caucasians, which is true, is put with the Christian Identity Movement, which from what I know teaches salvation is only possible to the white race, which troubles me. P.S. I am 15, and your documentaries have helped me so much since finding the truth about World War II in 2016, and going onwards, TGSNT is what initially got me on my path to becoming more Christian, learning and acting on my faith. That's a great, well-thought-out question there. So what do you think about that, Dennis? Is it just whites, the lost sheep of the house of Israel, can be saved, or do you believe any race?
I answered the comment, and a knee-jerk reaction to that would have been, I would have felt it was any race. Anybody who follows Christ is Christ. But if it's true that Christ said that only those in the house of Israel can be saved, then it's a problem for the people outside the house of Israel.
That's the thing. You know, when you discover something that is the truth, it might not be politically correct. It might not be politically correct to, you know, in different ways. I mean, obviously, to say that Christianity is just for white people, that's not politically correct with a lot of universalist Christians to say that. But that's what it says in the Bible. I mean, Jesus said that he came only for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And if you look at what Christian Identity people say, I mean, they're not just making it up out of thin air. It's all taken from what's said in the Bible. It's all taken from what St. Paul talks about. I mean, each one of those peoples that he went to, the Galatians, the Ephesians, the Romans, he goes to them and he explains to them that they are actually descended from Abraham through Isaac. And he talks about them their forefather Abraham. He talks about them following the cloud during the day and the fire at night. He talks about them being under the law. And the only people that this could be true about is Israelites. And he also quotes bits from Hosea and Jeremiah that were actually foretelling that this time would come when all these nations, when the time of the nations would be full, which is the time of the Gentiles will be full, which meant that the time when that promise to Abraham that many nations would have come from him, that was the time. And Paul had realized that, and he was going to all these people and telling them that. And in actual fact, the next question for you here, I mean, I'll just say it now, actually. He puts a quote in there, and this confirms this. He says, this is Cedar Vicante, actually, who we addressed last week. He's written back to you again. And he says, thank you for addressing my question on the radio show. But be careful, Dennis. Don't fall for the trap of controlled opposition. This Adam stuff is nonsense. The church is the pillar and ground of truth. And then he has a quote, 1 Timothy 3:15. And that says, but if I tarry long, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth. And without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in the flesh, justified in the spirit, seen of angels, preached unto the nations, believed on in the world, received up into glory. And that was written in, what was it, about 40 AD, 50 AD. And what it is saying there is that by that time, the gospel had already been preached unto all the nations, all the nations it was meant for. Mm-hmm. So by that time, it had been preached to them. So there are no Chinese, no Africans. It was meant for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And it had already been preached to all those nations by that time, by the time that you know, the apostles were writing.
Well, I did put up a kind of a, not so much a warning, but just a statement to say that you know, religion, I mean, it's controversial just by itself, the essence of it. And so people really need to research themselves and to follow what they believe, because, you know, some people can look at different interpretations in different ways. So for me, you know, you just believe what your own belief tells you and what you discover yourself, which may not be what I'm saying or what you're saying, but if it works for them, then, you know, it works for them.
Yeah, I mean, we're putting facts in front of people, and they have to use their own logic and their own powers of reason to tell whether if these facts are true. I think what Cedar Vicante is saying is, well, because the church doesn't talk about this, then it can't be true. But you know, the church is ignoring all these verses. The church is ignoring all this history that says that, you know, that the Jews were actually Esau, Edom at that time. And
that's when, right.
You know, when Christ says to the Jews, your father was a murderer from the beginning, and you're responsible for the blood of Abel and all the other prophets. The only way that could be true is if they go all the way back to Cain. And the only way that could be true is through the Canaanites, and that's through Esau, Edom. That's not Jacob, Israel. He's not responsible for the blood of Abel, is he? He can't have been. He wasn't born until thousands of years later. But Esau, Edom's descendants, they had the Canaanite blood in them, the Canaanite blood that went all the way back to Cain, who murdered Abel. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what Christ says. Now, the church doesn't preach that, but that's what Jesus said, and that's what the historians bear that out. If you read Josephus, he talks about all how in Judea it was all filled up with Edomites. Herod, King Herod, was an Edomite. So mm-hmm. we can put these facts there, and we're just saying, well, logic says and reason says that this is what they're talking about, and the church. Yeah. Has ignored it for whatever reason, probably because the church thought, well, it's not very politically correct, and the church wanted to be imperialistic, and it wanted to bring in Africans and Chinese and make it a part universal, of the world order, yeah, and universalize it. And finally, he says, so far, all of your work has been in line with the true Catholic faith, until this one little part in the video. If they can convince the world, or at least those of us who have an understanding of your works in relation to the events of today, that you are a racist nutbag who thinks that only whites are human or descendants of Adam, all of your hard work will be in vain. Well, you know, you're going to be called a racist nutbag anyway, Dennis. I think we all are.
Well, I don't consider myself a racist nutbag. Well,
yeah,
like I said, I'm no doubt it will be thrown at me.
Yeah, well, you're not racist, and I don't think you're saying that. Only whites are human.
I'm not saying that neither. No, I'm also son of an immigrant. So really, in one sense, I should be on the other side.
Well, yeah, you're son of a white immigrant, though.
Of course.
But, I mean, what he's saying here is he's trying to say that you're saying that only whites are human. That isn't what you're saying. What you're saying, or what it seems to me, what you're saying is that the Bible is meant for the descendants of Adam, because that's what the book says. And that mm-hmm. Christ came for the lost sheep of the house of Israel, because that's what he says. And history shows us that these lost sheep became the European nations. So that's why Christianity took off in Europe. That's why it works with Europeans. And when you give it to Haitians or Africans or Mexicans, you know, they turn it into voodoo, or they turn it into communism, or they ruin it, basically, because it's not really meant for them. And they don't understand it. I mean, it makes sense to me, but it's not what the church preaches. But then the church will tell you that Adolf Hitler is wrong as well. And they'll tell you that he was a bad guy.
Yeah, they will. And, you know, there's a lot been hidden there. Because when you had the interview with the bishop recently, and he said that he hadn't even heard of the people being smuggled out to Europe after the end of the war. So if he didn't know, then they have hidden it. For a lot of people,
yeah, they cover stuff up, and really, I think, you know, the church should be addressing this, should be looking into it, because it proves the Christian message. That's what proved the Christian message for me was looking into all of this and finding out,
yeah.
You know, the proof that the European nations were the tribes of Israel, because that's really like earth shaking. That is, that's life changing to discover that, and then find all the evidence for it. Because it suddenly all makes sense. The Bible makes sense. Why Europeans became Christian, that makes sense. Why the Jews hate us, that makes sense. You know, what, as you said, that war.
Especially the Germans.
Yeah, that war against the Germans, you know, it was Jacob against Esau. It suddenly makes sense. But
I thought about why they're always trying to destroy history as well. And I believe the reason for that is the only living thing today what thinks like that, doesn't know its own history, are animals. And so if they can get everybody to deny their own history or have their history hidden from them, then we'd just like animals. We wouldn't know anything about ourselves. You just live for this particular generation.
Well, that is a big part of it, isn't it? Is changing our history.
Yeah.
I mean, once,
they've always done it as well.
Once you find this stuff out, I mean, I find history fascinating now. You know, I never used to when I was a kid, but learning, you know, the Christian identity stuff, I've got a real thirst for learning about history and connecting it all up and seeing how it fits in.
This is the problem with schools, because when I was at school, up to a certain year, I loved history. I mean, I used to read books at all on history and Roman Empire and things like that. But when I got to the time when I was about to take exams, and everyone was asked, well, which subject do you want to take? It's so many, you know, to pick from out of a bunch of them. Obviously, I picked history. And then, lo and behold, all I learned that year was about tea in India or some other rice or something like that. You know what I mean? Nothing to do with history as I knew it. And consequently, I lost all interest and failed the exam.
I can remember learning about Jethro Tull's sea drill. And that was about
really?
It. Yeah. That was about it. But what really fascinates me now is you know, learning that the Assyrians, they were white.
Real history, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
the teachers.
The original Indians, the Aryans, they were white. The original Egyptians, they were white. And that fascinates me, because then you think, well, you know, they were part of our family tree. So I want to learn about them. I want to learn about their customs, the way that they lived, and find everything out about them. Because if you know what went on in your past, you know what's going to go on in the future. And
control the future.
Yeah, you're going to improve your character. So hopefully this City Vacantis will investigate the evidence for himself and make his own mind up without, you know, just saying, I'm going to listen to this guy in the church because he's in the church.
You know, or even listen to me. I mean, you know, I've always said I don't know it all. I do know enough, but I don't know it all. I'm surprised at times.
Aren't you been quite humble with this? I mean, you've changed your views over the years, haven't you, Dennis?
On certain things I have, yeah, that's, yeah.
When you find new evidence. You know, that's what being a truth seeker is all about. We've got another comment from Slaptrap here. He says, we need more people debunking nonsense like this video that slanders the Third Reich. These truthers are pathetic. And it's a bit of a long video. I don't know if you got the time to watch it all, Dennis.
It's been an hour long, isn't it? Yeah, I didn't see it all.
I really don't blame you for not watching all of it. It's basically an interview with somebody called Gary Wayne, and it's about the Third Reich and the Nephilim connection. And basically this guy, Gary Wayne, he makes all these accusations and allegations, and he doesn't come up with one reference for any of it. Doesn't say where he's got these, you know, crazy ideas from at all.
Well, this is just the problem, because I get nailed to the wall. You know, even somebody asked for two. There should be two references to each of these fines I make. And as I explained to him, when you shut a country down for 5 years and nobody can get in and nobody can get out, and they wipe everything they possibly could get their hands on clean, to look for one is hard enough. But he were asking for two.
Well, this guy doesn't put any up. And some of his ideas, he thinks Hitler is an antichrist figure because he took over the government. That's his logic there. So he must be an antichrist. And he says Hitler was working to Helen Blavatsky's ideas, who he can't even pronounce her name. Yeah. We've debunked that before, showed that there was nothing in common with that apart from the word Aryan. And he thinks that the Aryans were the ones fighting against the Adamites in the Genesis account. So he thinks, I don't know, he thinks the Aryans were the Nephilim? It's all a little bit confusing.
Well, it sounds like it, where he's pointing out, yeah.
And then he comes up with Ariosophy, which he says was the basis of National Socialism. And I've got, so I looked up Ariosophy. I know I knew a little bit about it before, but I'll just quote this bit from Wikipedia about it, because this guy says that Ariosophy was right at the basis of National Socialism. Arminism and Ariosophy are esoteric ideological systems pioneered by Guido von Liszt and Jörg Lanz von Liebenfels, respectively in Austria, between 1890 and 1930. And people might have seen Guido von Liszt. He's got a big, long, grey beard and like a beret that he wears. The idea of von Liszt and Lanz von Liebenfels were part of a general occult revival in Austria and Germany of the late 19th and early 20th centuries, inspired by historical Germanic paganism and holistic philosophy, as well as esoteric concepts influenced by German Romanticism and Theosophy. The connection of this German mysticism with historical Germanic culture is evident in the mystic's fascination with runes, in the form of Guido von Liszt's Armanen runes. So I guess the logic must be the Nazis used runes, so they must have been following Ariosophy, because the Ariosophists made a big thing about the runes. So I think that's partially his logic. And then you've got Goodrich Clark, the historian. He's made a comprehensive study on the subject, and he finds little evidence of direct influence on National Socialism, except in the case of the highly idiosyncratic ancient German mythos elaborated by the clairvoyant SS Brigade Führer Karl Maria Willigut, of which the practical consequences were, first, the incorporation of Willigut's symbolism into the ceremonies of an elite circle within the SS. So that means they had runes, basically, or other symbolism that this guy had dug up from the past that some of the elite used in the SS. I'm not particularly sure what it was, but it's obviously not that important. It's just symbolism. And secondly, the official censure of those occultists and runic magicians whom Willigut stigmatized as heretics, which may have persuaded Heinrich Himmler to order the internment of several of them. In actual fact, there were loads of them. And it wasn't just the Freemasons that they put in the camps. They also put all these pagan types in the camps, the magicians and the occultists. And he says the most notable other case is Himmler's Ahnenerbe, which we've also dealt with before, that was just looking into ancestral heritage. There wasn't anything occult with that. And finally, Goodrich Clark examines what evidence there is for influences on Hitler and on other Nazis, but he concludes that Ariosophy is a symptom rather than an influence in the way that it anticipated Nazism. So it wasn't anything to do with it. National Socialism wasn't based on it at all. It just used the same symbols.
What really annoys me is the fact that, I mean, the SS took a holy oath. And what these people are all saying is, you know, well, they didn't really mean to take that oath, which makes the SS a Tommy Kelly outfit. You know what I'm saying? They weren't a Tommy Kelly outfit. They were a divine swore an oath to God outfit. And, you know, you can throw mud at that all you want, but that's what they were. And that's how they lived their life. And the fact is that they've been trying to knock that down ever since World War II ended.
Well, he was also saying that this guy was saying that the Teutonic Knights, they were a secret society. He just bundles the Teutonic Knights in there with the Freemasons, with the Rosicrucians, with the Templars, with the Jesuits, you know, all the same. He says all monotheism is the same. So basically he thinks Christianity is the same as Islam and Judaism. Like crazy ideas, and he's got thousands of views on this channel. But getting
the state, especially with all sources.
Getting back to this idea that National Socialism was based on paganism and the occult and Theosophy and Ariosophy. This is a quote from Mein Kampf from pages 204 to 205. It's a fairly long quote, but I think it's relevant. And Hitler says, it is entirely out of harmony with the spirit of the nation to keep harping on that far-off and forgotten nomenclature which belongs to the ancient Germanic times and does not awaken any distinct association in our age. This habit of borrowing words from the dead past tends to mislead the people into thinking that the external trappings of its vocabulary are the important features of a movement. It is really a mischievous habit, but it is quite prevalent nowadays. He's saying there, words, deeds matter and not words. It's deeds that are the important thing. At that time and subsequently, I had to warn followers repeatedly against these wandering scholars who were peddling Germanic folklore and who never accomplished anything positive or practical except to cultivate their own superabundant self-conceit. The new movement must guard itself against an influx of people whose only recommendation is their own statement that they have been fighting for these very same ideals during the last 30 or 40 years. Now, if somebody has fought for 40 years to carry into effect what he calls an idea, and if these alleged efforts not only show no positive results, but have not even been able to hinder the success of the opposing party, then the story of those 40 years of futile effort furnishes sufficient proof for the incompetence of such a protagonist. People of that kind are especially dangerous because they do not want to participate in the movement as ordinary members. They talk rather of the leading positions, which would be the only fitting posts for them in view of their past work, and also so that they might be enabled to carry on that work further. But woe to a young movement if the conduct of it should fall into the hands of such people. A businessman who has been in charge of a great firm for 40 years and who has completely ruined it through his mismanagement is not the kind of person one would recommend for the founding of a new firm. And it is just the same with a new national movement. Nobody of common sense would appoint to a leading post in such a movement some Teutonic Methuselah who has been ineffectively preaching some idea for a period of 40 years until himself and his idea had entered the stage of senile decay. Furthermore, only a very small percentage of such people join a new movement with the intention of serving its end unselfishly and helping in the spread of its principles. In most cases, they come because they think that under the aegis of the new movement, it will be possible for them to promulgate their old ideas to the misfortune of their new listeners. Anyhow, nobody ever seems able to describe what exactly these ideas are. It is typical of such persons that they rant about ancient Teutonic heroes of the dim and distant ages, stone axes, battle spears and shields, whereas in reality they themselves are the woefulest poltroons imaginable. For those very same people who brandish Teutonic tin swords that have been fashioned carefully according to ancient models and wear padded bearskins with the horns of oxen mounted over their bearded faces, proclaim that all contemporary conflicts must be decided by the weapons of the mind alone, and thus they skedaddle when the first communist cudgel appears. Posterity will have little occasion to write a new epic on these heroic gladiators. I have seen too much of that kind of people not to feel a profound contempt for their miserable play-acting. To the masses of the nation, they are just an object of ridicule. But the Jew finds it to his own interest to treat these folklore comedians with respect and to prefer them to real men who are fighting to establish a German state. And yet these comedians are extremely proud of themselves. Notwithstanding their complete fecklessness, which is an established fact, they pretend to know everything better than other people, so much so that they make themselves a veritable nuisance to all sincere and honest patriots to whom not only the heroism of the past is worthy of honour, but who also feel bound to leave examples of their own work for the inspiration of the coming generation.
Could have put it better myself.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, we say that Hitler, you know, would not be impressed with, you know, pagan types today, and he's just criticizing it all there. He's saying that this isn't relevant to today, is it?
I like to think we've never established that he was a Christian in this past documentary. All the evidence, facts, and like he said, actions speak louder than words, which when you study all his actions, they were all Christian and they were all motivated by Christianity.
Yeah, that was me. I added that bit, you know, just explaining it. You know, it's deeds and not words. And
but yeah, it's true, though.
It was Christian deeds that he did. I mean, National Socialism was a Christian movement. And then this guy also then speaks about Dietrich Eckart, and he claims that Dietrich Eckart initiated Hitler into Freemasonry, and not just Freemasonry, but all of the secret societies. And of course, there's no proof for that whatsoever. And I've got a really good quote here from the Holy Reich on Dietrich Eckart, because he's quite an interesting character. Because, you know, this guy is saying that he was a Freemason and all the rest of it. So this is what the Holy Reich has to say about him. Dietrich Eckart was perhaps the most important ideologue in the early stages of the movement. It was he who coined the phrase Jewish materialist spirit within us and without us, used in point 24, an expression that implied a religious element in the Nazi typology and suggested the Jewish problem was not solely racial. Eckart became something of a mentor to Hitler, introducing him to Munich's extremist milieu and strengthening his basic beliefs. 20 years later, Hitler acknowledged his ideological indebtedness to Eckhart, stating that, "At the time, I was intellectually a child still on the bottle." Hitler felt so indebted to Eckhart, he ended Mein Kampf with a tribute to him. "And among our heroes, I want also to count that man, one of the best, who devoted his life to the awakening of his, our people, in his writings and his thoughts, and finally in his deeds, Dietrich Eckhart." One of the earliest works of Nazi ideology was Eckhart's Bolshevism, From Moses to Lenin, A Conversation Between Adolf Hitler and Myself, written shortly before his death in 1923. Now, and I'm just interjecting, this book is often put in there to show that Hitler wasn't a Christian or Hitler was against the Old Testament. And I've always said that, you know, this can't have been Hitler speaking here because he doesn't know what he's talking about, basically. And now I'll continue with what this quote says. "Although scholars have pointed to the importance of this book as an early instance of Nazi ideology, they generally overlook its strong religious overtones. It is most likely that Hitler in fact held no such conversation with Eckhart. These are probably spurious conversations with the Nazi leader. However, because the conversation was manufactured by Eckhart, it still remains a reliable indication of his own views. Lamenting the cultural and moral crevasse he believed his country had fallen into, Eckhart suggests that Christ provided an important moral compass. Christ stands never otherwise than erect, never otherwise than upright, eyes flashing in the midst of the creeping Jewish rabble. And the words fall like lashes of the whip, 'Your father is the devil.' Far from advocating a paganist or anti-Christian religion, Eckhart held that in Germany's post-war tailspin, Christ was a leader to be emulated. In Christ, the embodiment of all manliness, we find all that we need, and if we occasionally speak of Balder, our words always contain some joy, some satisfaction, that our pagan ancestors were already so Christian as to have indications of Christ in this ideal figure." The book, published posthumously, ended with an afterword by the publishers. "Eckhart's death prevented the completion of this highly significant work showing the Christian approach to the Volkisch movement. This dualism, conceived in a specifically Christian language, guided Eckhart's thinking on other subjects as well. On the First World War, he wrote, 'This war was a religious war. Finally, one sees that clearly, a war between light and darkness, truth and falsehood, Christ and Antichrist. This religious dualism achieved apocalyptic dimensions. The moment of truth has arrived. Humanity once again has the choice between appearance and reality, between Germandom and Jewry, between the all and the nothing, between truth and falsehood. Eckhart believed in an ultimate confrontation between these forces. When light comes to blows with darkness, no pacts are made. There is only struggle for life and death until the destruction of one or the other. And that is why world war is the only apparent end." In such passages, Eckhart makes use of a Christian discourse, an apocalyptic opposition of good and evil, rather than delineating an explicit ideological program with a Christian content. Use of religious metaphors in political movements was certainly nothing new, nor in Weimar Germany was it limited to the Nazi movement. But Eckhart goes further than this, demonstrating an underlying assumption that his struggle against the Jews was ontologically bound with the struggle for Christianity. The racial duality between Aryan and Semite overlapped with and was related to a religious duality between Christian and Jew. Doesn't sound very pagan-like to me.
Sounds like I could sit down and have a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of really interesting stuff there.
I mean,
we say that National Socialism was a Christian movement, it was a holy war, and that's what he's basically saying in that.
That's what I heard.
And I like the way that there's, you know, they state that this conversation with Hitler was spurious. It kind of happened. Because it's, you know, it's not Hitler's sort of language that he would use. This video, I mean, he continues. He says that Hitler was eventually associated with Crowley,
and that
Hitler thought he was a reincarnated king from the Second Reich. And then he starts going on about Nostradamus, and I thought, you know, maybe that's actually where he's getting his information on Hitler from. Nostradamus. Maybe some.
It'll be.
Yeah, maybe some prediction of Nostradamus. He's thought, well, that's got to be Hitler he's talking about, so I'll use that for getting my facts from. But it's it just continues in that vein. He says the Rothschilds funded Hitler, of course.
Same old.
And then he says Ford funded them as well, and he's sort of implying that Henry Ford was the same as the Rothschilds, basically because both had money, I guess. Doesn't get the nuance between them.
I don't think Rothschild sent Hitler $50,000 every birthday.
No. And then he says the German church was just a veneer and a cover for polytheism. And yet, just looking at what Dietrich Eckart was saying there, one of the quotes there, he said, even though we might talk about Baldur, which was one of the deities from the past, from the pre-Christian times, he was saying what we are proud of is the fact that he had Christ-like attributes. He was like a forerunner of Christ, and we can be proud of that. It's like there's a quote also about the British saying that Christianity was a new thing in the East, but there never was a time that the British people didn't hold to the same precepts. The precepts of Christianity. So it's saying that the Germans and British were essentially trying to live as Christians before they even accepted Christianity. That's why that's why the pagans decided to become Christian, and it wasn't forced on them. It was all their wisest men looked into this. I'm reading Bede's book at the moment about the history of England. And he talks in that about when these priests would come, they would talk to the king, and then the king would send them all the wise men and all the pagan priests to talk with them, to study what these Christian priests had to say. And then at the end of that, they would say, well, this is superior, and they would advise the king that this would be the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And that's how it happened in England, and I think that happened in most places. It was only trouble with Charlemagne with a political uprising that pagans like to point to.
True.
It was peaceful. Finally, he says the Nazis are the extreme left.
Yeah.
And skinheads are Freemasons. Skinheads are secret societies like Freemasons. Oh, and liberals are only left of center, but they're not extremists. I thought that was a classic.
Yeah, well, you've got a wrong way around there. I mean, I don't look at Hitler's National Socialism as extreme anywhere. I look at it as nationalism as centre ground. And anything not nationalistic in a country is extremist.
But how can people come out with stuff like that, though? You know, how can they just make these accusations with nothing to back them up at all? Really wild accusations.
Well, I remember Jim Myers once saying, there were communists, first of all, they were national socialists, but then they became communist socialists. It's all the same. Now, to somebody who wasn't got a clue about the political scene of socialism would think, well, yeah, he must be right, but obviously, A lot of historians in America fell for that during the time of information coming out of World War II. Bill Cooper, one of them. And it's worked well for him.
Well, what is socialism? Socialism is justice for the different social classes. And if you're going to have justice...
Communism.
Yeah, but if you're going to have justice for the different social classes, you can only do that at a national scale. If it's your own people, it's like, because you've got your own family, obviously, you've got brighter members of the family, you've got less successful members of the family, but you look after them all because they're members of your family. And that's the only way that socialism can work, is on the nationalist scale, because you're related by blood. That's the important point.
Well, the problem is when you get Scottish nationalists trying to rejoin the EU.
Scottish nationalists.
Exactly.
Sorry, just the word itself makes me laugh. The Scottish National Party.
That's the problem.
Scottish International Party. Dennis,
and the Welsh is the same, the Welsh nationalists.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
British,
yeah.
Dreadful.
All they've said they want to open up Wales to unlimited immigration, and they want to stay within the EU.
Welsh nationalists speaking.
Yeah, Welsh nationalists. Even though Wales voted overwhelmingly to leave the EU, and they don't want to be flooded with refugees. These parties, they have the gall to call themselves nationalists, and then they go directly against, you know, the national good.
It's incredible, isn't it? It's just so obvious.
It's disgusting to see. It's disgusting to see. Well, we know the truth anyway. Dennis.
For sure.
We got to the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for coming on, Dennis.
No problem.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great bank holiday weekend, is it again? Ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.